Good morning. God bless each one. Maybe even though we have an inverted church service in a way, maybe you're done rushing around now and caught your breath and you're ready to go, huh? So, yeah, in a way, I feel kind of bad. We are planning to go to the ordination in Fairland. And I didn't know. I thought we could make it without doing this, but it seemed to work as well for some others. So we'll go ahead and do this. I feel like my message this morning is a little bit unusual for me anyway. It didn't quite come together like I thought. Like one author said one time, he said he started writing a story or whatever he was writing, some article, and he said it just wouldn't go. He said it just finally he gave up and let it write itself. So maybe that's what I did. I don't know. It didn't really go like I thought it would, but maybe it can still be a blessing. Let's start by this. Does anybody remember what I preached about? I think it was May 1st. So that's almost 2 months. Let's see how good of a memory you have. Anybody want to remember? Anybody remember? Now, I had time to think about it. I don't know if I could have just popped that off either, but actually, and I preached it. Okay, you're close. I think that was the one before that, actually, maybe. But thanks for trying. Anybody else want to try? Okay, I appreciate your effort on it anyway. It's not quite. No, I'll just tell you, it was on leadership, so I guess in a way, yes. As a reason for leadership in the church as I had it down, so I don't know if that brings back any memories or not, it's fine. But let's do this. Actually, I'll just say this before I do that. I had started probably kind of a personal thing. I had preached a number on the home, and I was actually, maybe even before the ordination, was kind of thinking of plans, thinking of phasing into just leadership and the whys for it, and also just different biblical examples. And so I don't know, maybe you think you're going to have an overdose of this till this is all over, I don't know, but it's what I had started and nothing else really came for me. So I had a couple things I was working on. I was going through the Bible and looking at negative and positive leadership traits and things found in Scripture. And one person that I wanted to do it on especially was Moses. It just seemed to be so much about Moses that really intrigued me, and it was really what I need for myself. And so I started, and I initially started with leadership lessons from Moses, and I had two categories underneath it. One was the negative, some negatives, and then the positive. Well, guess what? This thing got longer and longer until I had to split it. And so this morning I ended up with just the negatives, which is maybe not good. It wasn't my intent at all, but I don't think, if I would have preached that whole thing, we might as well skip Sunday school and still probably been long. So we'll just do the negatives and hope you hang in there for the positives. And in a way, I want to make clear, I'm not trying to make Moses look bad. I feel like he was a man a lot like we are, yet at the same time, he does one verse I think I'll end up reading. It's probably in the next message. But he was one of the meekest persons ever. So one way that Moses was far above and beyond me was his meekness, and also his, I don't know if we'll get into that much today, but also another thing is when he was confronted or faced confrontation from people, it would say different times he just fell on his face. I'm not trying to put Moses in a negative light, in other words. It's amazing, and I do want to bring out that aspect. But this morning, we're going to look more on the negative. So first of all, though, probably a lot of people kind of leadership, he's talking about preachers, maybe to dads. That tunes out right. So let's see. How many of you classify yourself as leaders this morning? Would you stand up? Just anybody that thinks you're a leader of some sort. It doesn't really matter how. Let's see who all thinks they're a leader. Okay. Others slow. They had a few stragglers at the end, so the rest of you keep thinking. Keep standing, if you don't mind. I think we might need some more. I don't know. This is getting unfortunate. Moms, don't you ever help your children, or what's going on here? Never tell their children to pick up toys or clean the house, I think. There we go. We're getting better here. That's better. We still have a few that are stuck here. How many of the rest of you that are still sitting have ever been responsible for a child, like, say, taught Sunday school, taught school, maybe been responsible for siblings while parents were gone? Isn't there any more here? We're getting more. Okay, well, good enough. I think I'll stop there. I think I could get everybody standing eventually. Maybe I should have started with this one. How many of you have been affected by a leader in your life? I don't think anybody could stay sitting on that one, right? So maybe that's the one I should have done. But so don't go to sleep on me just because you don't think you're Moses and you have to lead the children of Israel, 6 million, whatever, 4.5 million people through the desert. You say, that's heavy stuff. I don't get into that kind of thing. Guess what? You don't get off the hook that easy. You still have a lot to do. So evidently, most of my scriptures are going to be in Exodus and Numbers. So you might as well open your Bible to Exodus 2 a while. So who are leaders? You know, leaders can be anybody from like Moses, who had a huge responsibility, to maybe somebody, maybe you feel like you're barely a leader. I mean, you're the youngest in your family. You've never been responsible for siblings. You haven't taught school. But guess what? You still, these leadership traits can still influence you. And leadership is something that a lot of people find very interesting. You can pay a lot of money and go to a lot of seminars and get a lot of good and not so good teaching on leadership, depending where you go. But here we have Moses, a living example. So I just love the story of Moses, different ones here. So let's, poor Moses, let's pick on him a little bit this morning. Being a meek person, I don't think he'd mind anyway. But I do want to emphasize this lesson is for us all. I had an article forwarded to me out of the Pilgrim Witness. I forget. I think Daniel sent that to me. Was that Dwayne, somebody that wrote that one? Do you remember, Daniel? But he did a very good job, and you mentioned in Sunday school last Sunday, it's something about the need for leaders or something like that. And he basically went down and was pinpointing at fathers and parents. And what is interesting, he made the statement that if the broad base, if you will, as if we shall say in our churches, just use the church's instance, if parents are not, especially fathers, are not leading out in the home, it doesn't really matter what church leaders do. The outcome will still not be positive, because it's impossible and you see it in our country. I mean, even in, we could talk about our southern neighbor, not to put them in a bad light, but Mexico, they've had different presidents that actually got elected as reformists. We were going to be against fraud and stuff. Well, the president can be ever so honest and ever so much against fraud. If everybody below him is a fraud, what can he do? You know, you finally can only go so far. So basically, if for any effort or anything to be success, leadership has to start at the base and work up. In a way, if we can say it that way, not saying that the other way isn't as important as well. Okay, so I have 5 points. I recently got, one of my brothers told me that you're allowed to have 5 points in a sermon because that's how many fingers you have on one hand. So I kind of like that. I was thought the best ones keep it to 3. So I went with 5 today. So I've got 5 points. That is 5 negative aspects where Moses struggled with leadership. The first was a self-focus issues. The second one is failure to focus on God, which those two are closely related. Maybe I should have combined them because we'll get into that a little bit more. The third one is a failure to start at home. The fourth one is trying to do it all and alone. And the fifth is frustration and impatience resulting in personal disobedience. And so maybe you got my whole message figured out already, and that's great. But let's look at the self-focus issue. Moses had a self-focus just like I do, just like I think probably all of us struggle with to some extent. And, you know, if we go to Exodus chapter 2, do I have those? Yeah, Exodus chapter 2, verse 11, it says, "And it came to pass in those days when Moses was grown," so we have a big man here now, "that he went out to his brethren," that means he went out to see the children of Israel, "and looked on their burdens." So we have a big man going out here, and he decides, oh, I'm old enough, I'm going to go see. And somehow he knew that he was an Israelite, evidently. And so he goes out and he starts looking around and he sees problems. He sees one big problem. We'll get into that in a minute here. And Moses, being a man, was like the rest of us as men anyway. I don't know, maybe ladies aren't this way. But he had a personal vision. He saw that Egyptian beating up on this Israelite and, oh, this is wrong. He had a vision to correct this problem. And so his plans, his ideas, and his opinions about this thing kicked into place. And he used his talents, what he perceived to be his talents and his gifts, with the resulting ability that he had in those talents and gifts, he killed the Egyptian. So Moses solved the problem, right? He saw a problem. He had a vision for the problem. He had an opinion on what should be done, and he went ahead and did it. That was Moses. But there was a problem, and that was he was taking care of this. While there was actually a problem here, the problem was, we could look in Scripture later on, God agreed with the problem that Moses saw. At the same time, Moses got a couple things wrong. He took care of it his way. And in a way, he took care, he didn't really solve anything. He actually created more by doing that. Another thing he did it at his time. And he used his ideas and plans and what he could see as the way to do it. And another thing is, I think Moses felt fairly self-confident when he did this. Because he looked around, he killed him, and he buried him, and he thought it's all taken care of. At least that's the impression I get from what happened the next day. So this is what happens with a self-focused leader, or a self-focused person, maybe I should say. There is two sides to this. A self-focused person can sometimes, a leader can sometimes not care at all about others. Moses wasn't. We're focusing on Moses. So a self-focused leader like Moses would have been at this point was worried about public opinion and perception. If we would go down to, well, I'll read that here in a minute. But it says he looked around. He didn't see anybody, so he went ahead and killed him. He was scared about public opinion and perception. A self-focused leader will take matters into his own hands. There was nobody telling Moses, this is your job. He just went ahead and did it. No, God hadn't called him to this at this point yet. He instantly also noticed, he instantly knew what action to take. There was no problem. Moses saw a problem. He took care of the problem. He didn't have to pray. He didn't have to ask God, what should I do here or anyone else? He just did it. And another interesting thing, and I think this comes close to me at least sometimes, is he had a predetermined formula to follow. In other words, he didn't need to rely on God to tell him what to do because Moses already knew. And that's another problem with a self-focused leader. I see it in myself, and I want to say this very carefully. I'm not trying to be critical of other church groups or anything like that by saying this. At the same time, I understand why some groups work like they do a lot better than I used to, because as a leader, as a parent or whatever, there's real comfort in always knowing how to respond. But you know, the problem with that is I don't need God's daily involvement in my life. And that's one big problem with that, and that's a message all on its own. Another thing about a self-focused leader like Moses was here is he would rather not lead openly. Moses was, while he wanted to solve problems, he wanted to help in a way, he wanted to do it under the table, if you will. He wasn't open about it. Why did he have to bury the Egyptian? For one thing, and why was he scared the next day when this came to light? A self-focused leader hides things under the table. And another thing, any of you that were here for the driver's class, remember that nice man that came and tell us? Do you remember one of his favorite phrases? Somebody would say, I've got a question for you. Anybody remember what he would say? I've got an answer. And I'm not trying to run poor Jonathan, whatever his name was, down necessarily, but you know, a self-focused leader is like that. You got a question, he's got the answer. He's just like that. Makes me think of a brother I know in a church, kind of a setting a little bit like ours. And they said I better be careful. Maybe I'm in the same boat for all I know. Somebody might have said this about me. But his own son told me he just loves to give advice. Now, there's nothing wrong with giving advice. Please understand, the Bible tells us to seek advice. But Proverbs also says that he's like a wise man is like a deep well, and it needs to be drawn out of him. So probably for advice to be received best, it's often best to wait till it's drawn. So anyway, wherever that is, a self-focused leader, you've got a question, he's got an answer. And at least you know where you're at, I guess. So let's look at Exodus chapter 2, verse 11. And it came to pass in those days, when Moses was grown, he went out to his brethren and looked on their burdens. And he spied an Egyptian smiting a Hebrew, one of his brethren, and he associated with that person. This is one of my brothers. And he looked this way and that way, and when he saw that there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And he went out the next day, or the second day, and behold, two men of the Hebrews, now these are two Hebrews, two of his brethren, strove together, and he said to him that did the wrong, here he again saw a problem, he again knew who was in the wrong, wherefore smitest thou thy fellow? And he said, who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? And Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known. Now when Pharaoh heard this thing, he sought to slay Moses. But Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian and sat down by a well. And now I have this part of the message titled, The Leader Who Could. You know, a self-focused or self-confident leader is the leader who can. Like I said, you got a question, he's got an answer. He sees a problem, he knows how to fix it. There's no really much time delay there. He knows how to do it. He's got a formula. He's got it figured out. So that's one Moses. Now, Moses being an interesting person, he was a type of a lot of things, and he was a type of us or me. The next, not very much in chapter 3, verse 10 is where we'll start reading. We have the leader who couldn't. Oh, this leader couldn't at all. Here we have a man that he was told to go do a job, and he had more excuses. He sounded like a lot of Mennonites playing their polite Mennonite game, but he was doing it with God rather than with another person. So just notice this. Let's go to Exodus chapter 3, verse 10. And he has, here we have the four classical, I'm going to call them, I can't leadership excuses. Maybe it's as simple as you can't have devotions. That's leading in a way. You're leading out in devotions. So what are those? It says, who am I? You know, oh, don't get me. Get somebody else. I mean, there's a visitor here, or he can talk better. Well, anyway, I'm getting on one of my others. But who am I? You know, in reality, as we do God's work, it's not about who I am, but who God is. And God told Moses that very clearly. The second classical leadership excuse is, they won't believe me. They're going to think I'm just doing this on my own. It's going to look as if I just... Yeah, I like to jump into stuff. That's one I struggle with sometimes. That was the second one. The third one is, I can't talk. I just can't say it right. Have you ever heard that one? I've heard that one quite a bit. I just can't say it right. Or somebody knows, I should talk to him. Maybe you're encouraging a brother to talk to another brother. Oh, well, I don't know what I'd say. Anyway. And then the fourth one is, yeah, it's a good idea. Moses kind of ends up telling God, yes, it's a good idea, my own words, but use or send somebody else. This is just kind of out of my comfort zone. It's not my thing. So now notice how Moses played these. He used a little different words than a lot of Mennonites do, but he did a real good job of it. So Exodus chapter 3, verse 10 is, come now, therefore, God talking to Moses, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. So here God is telling Moses, you go do this very thing that you wanted to do. Now's the time. Now's my way. Okay, here starts Moses. And Moses said unto God, who am I that I should go unto Pharaoh, that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? You know, who am I that I should do this? God, you find somebody else. You know, I'm not from a very good family. Just find somebody else. And he said... And God says this, certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this very mountain. Upon this mountain, we know that happened. So God confirmed Moses, I'm sending you, Moses. And when Moses like, who am I? God said, it's not who you are, it's who I am. Go. Okay, and then Moses keeps going. And Moses said unto God, behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and I shall say unto them, the God of your fathers has sent me unto you, they shall say unto me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? What am I going to tell these people? If I say, God sent me, who's God? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. He said, thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. So again, it's not about you, Moses. It's not about what you say. It's about me and who I am. Okay, let's go to, I have to keep moving. So let's go to chapter 4, verse 1. We have Moses keep on with his excuses. Exodus 4, verse 1. And Moses answered and said, but behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, the Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And then we have God telling Moses, okay, Moses. Let's give you a few signs here. What's that in your hand? That's a rod. Throw it down. Well, the rod turns into a snake. Go pick up the snake by its tail. And I would love seeing Moses do this. Like I said, I think he's a very human fellow. I hate snakes. I don't know if Moses hated them bad as I did or not. But after all, if God tells you to pick up a snake, what option do you have? So I figured he got a hold of the tail. And sure enough, this thing turned back into a rod. Praise the Lord. What a relief. And then God is like, okay, now stick your hand inside your shirt, let's say. And... okay, now pull it back out, and it has just got the worst disease you've ever seen, leprosy. Scared. I don't know, that was even worse than the snake. You couldn't even run away from your hand, could you? He's stuck. Well, stick it back in, and now it's whole. And he didn't stop there. He said, other thing, he said, if you take water out of the river and pour it onto the land when you're proving to them that I sent you, it'll turn into blood. So God gave three, that was one more than what was required, three proofs that he was telling Moses to do this. Then in chapter 4, verse 10, we have Moses pulling out the next one. Read chapter 4, verse 10 through 16. And Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore I've never been, nor since thou hast spoken, I'm not even right now, unto thy servant. But I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. I wondered if he was a Pennsylvania Dutchman. Sometimes their tongues get tangled up with each other. I don't know, but had to think of that slow speech and slow tongue. Got all wrapped up, didn't go where he wanted it. And he was saying, made me think of a dear brother years ago having devotions. And he would he had been at our place, and we had a little accident with a horse. And the horse had tore out a grapevine And anyway, he was having these devotions, and he wanted to talk about this, and he was talking about the wine that that Titus Bauman's had at their place, and that really perked a lot of people up. So I don't know, maybe Moses had a tongue like that. I don't know. But anyway, well, my tongue just doesn't work. I'm not eloquent. I can't talk like so-and-so. Let's see. Then God really gets busy here. Like, wow, God told Moses a mouthful, and I guess he's still saying it to us today if we listen, isn't it? And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb, or the deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. Don't worry about your mouth. Go do what you're supposed to be doing. And then Moses keeps on. Wow, he'd have definitely made a good Mennonite. And he said, oh, my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. In other words, yeah, go ahead and do this, God, but just find some other fellow someplace else. Just skip me. Just a bad package here. And it says, the next verse is amazing. It says, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And he said, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee. And when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him and put words in his mouth. I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you what you shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people. And he shall be, even he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou too shalt be to him instead of God. So in other words, okay, if you're not going to talk, let Aaron talk for you. But I'm going to speak to you, and you are going to have to tell Aaron what to say. So Aaron is the mouth, God is the director, and Moses is this unwilling person in between now. See if that suits you better. Go ahead and do it that way. Okay. As so much for that point. But, you know, isn't it amazing? I've noticed this over and over in other people. And I've actually, unfortunately, seen in myself probably more than anybody else. And that is, as long as I know how to do something, as long as I've got the answers, as long as I know exactly how things should be handled, God often doesn't give me that responsibility. It's when I come to the place of not knowing what to do. It's when I come to the place of just, I don't know, I'll just tell you a little bit about myself, is I enjoy thinking through issues, and that's one thing I've enjoyed. And probably by the time I was 21, 22, I had a lot of ideas, and I thought I knew about how homes should be, about how church should be, and about how all that kind of stuff. It seemed to me like, let's see, about the next 5 to 6 years, God just wiped out everything I thought I knew so much. And I'm not saying, I still struggle with it, please don't misunderstand me. But at the same time, it just seemed day after day, some of the things we went through, I just realized that it just didn't work. What I thought was such a good idea, what I thought just fell apart, didn't work. And finally, I came to the place of just needing to, again and again, just throw myself on God. And you know, that's the people God can use, is the ones that just don't have anything left but a rod, and they're almost unwilling to use that. Now, he does want us to give him that. Closely related to this thing of focusing on myself is a failure to focus on God, and I won't read a lot of scripture because these same scriptures could be applied, but you know, whether it's the accounts we just read, which is really probably the biggest failure time in Moses' life, if you will, we don't just have a ton of it later on. Or there was that one time when he was told to speak to a rock and he hit it twice with the rod. But whichever account you want to think about, Moses' failures always involved a failure to see what he was doing as God's work first and foremost. And that's what I'm telling myself. In other words, whatever God gives me to do, whatever capacity, whatever position, whatever place God asks me to fill, I can only do that as I focus on God rather than myself and what I know and my abilities. Otherwise, it's going to end in a wreck like Moses' experiments there did. And you know, just as it did in Moses, it does in me. But this, when Moses focused on himself rather than focusing on God, it led him to try his own way there when he was a young man, which probably every young man has some experience with. He tried to do his own thing in his way. He thought he saw a problem. He thought he knew how to fix it. Yet he stepped beyond what he was his responsibility and got him in big time trouble. Well, the next, his response to that was also very natural, was he reversed course then, and he said, well, I'm just going to get as far away from this problem where I at least don't even have to see it. I'm going to get way out in the desert, and I'm just going to hide myself in the desert and try to forget all about this and just take care of stupid sheep then if I can't do this. In that, he And when God called him, then he did the second thing, is that he tried to avoid God's plan and the work that God had planned for him because of fear of failure. There I go. I told you. He was so afraid of failing. After all, he had this previous experience that he decided, I don't even want to get involved this time. Well, what he wasn't thinking, again, he failed to focus that God was directing him this time, so it was a totally different thing. And then the last thing about his life there, if we read God's words, we'll do that in that last time where he hit the rock instead of speaking to it, he allowed impatience and frustration. And I can so clearly see, can you imagine being with these people and the amount of fussing they did? It's no problem to see why Moses became impatient, frustrated. At the same time, when he did that, he again focused on himself and what needed to be done rather than thinking of how he was doing this for God. Okay, the third one is the failure to start at home. We have this one in Exodus chapter 4, verse 24 through 27. I'm not necessarily sure we'll read it. You can read it. It's a little bit complicated passage in some ways. It's the account of where his son needed to be circumcised. And I don't know, there seemed to be some family division on this issue or something. Anyway, whatever, regardless of the reason, when Moses and his wife, family, were traveling to Egypt to begin this work, there was one problem, and that is that Moses' family was not in order. We could read in Genesis, I'll just read that for you, Genesis 17, verse 14. It says, "And the uncircumcised man-child whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He hath broken my covenant." So it basically seems like God's angel, this was a covenant made with Abraham, but in this case, Moses. Because Moses' son wasn't circumcised, God actually sent an angel that tried to kill the son, if I can read that correctly, because of the disobedience on Moses' part. Now, I don't know, in looking at the picture, it almost hints that Moses' wife was probably not familiar with this custom, and so maybe she was the sticking point, I don't know. She had quite the attitude about it anyway. And whatever all happened, the angel actually threatened to kill the son, which they complied. But basically, Moses' home up to this time was not in order. And I guess I'd like to say this, is in leadership, whatever it is, I have to start with myself and begin at home. If you're just a single person, that just means you yourself, probably. But I will say this also, nothing undermines, destroys, and invalidates leadership like inconsistency of being able to tell others what to do, yet not following it yourself or at home. And like I said, it starts with my personal life. A phrase I heard often growing up is, do you practice what you preach? In other words, the advice I give to others, if I tell somebody how to relate in a certain situation, do I relate like that? The way, let's say my oldest daughter, be old enough to drive, I had to have all kinds of advice for her on how to drive, and that's I have a certain fearful looking forward to that day. But anyway, so let's say, do I follow the advice I give her? I've noticed something really funny about me is, I don't know if anybody else is this way, but when I'm driving, things just feel a whole lot more under control and safer, even though they may not be safe, than they do when somebody else is driving. I don't know. I hope it's not just a Joe tendency. I kind of like to brush it off as a human thing, but maybe it is a Joe tendency. But regardless, you know, am I consistent? Do I practice what I preach the way that I fuss about somebody else's driving? Do I drive that way? And honestly, sometimes I do, as much as I hate to admit it. So do I start with myself? And it can go into probably even more important spiritual issues, though it's important in these natural things too. And it continues from there for me as a husband. It continues in the life of my wife. Now, do I practice what I preach? I mean, let's say I've preached a message on modesty, for instance. Is that shown in the life of my wife? And sometimes I need help in growing there. And we could take it on. You know, it doesn't only go along in my wife. It becomes evident in my children. Are they obedient and sensitive to what I claim I stand for? You know, I've seen so many fathers that can sound very concerned about certain issues and things, yet at the same time, their home, that home life, you know the children, you know some of the things the children struggle with, it doesn't at all match up. So where's the gap? Now, I want to be clear. Children can and do at times make their own choice, but wherever you have a large family, I'm not talking about a few individuals or anything, but where the bulk of the family is a certain way or the other, it often points back to not beginning at home. And in watching this, I don't think nothing so clearly shows a parent's true convictions as the lives of their children and grandchildren. And that's scary to me in a way. But where you as a church will be able to really see what Joe stands for and what he really believes and holds dear will be in the lives of probably my children eventually, and then also my grandchildren, maybe even more specifically, because there will show what I've emphasized and what I've lived. Because, for example, if I'm living an inconsistent life, maybe let's just say I'm promoting honesty, but underneath I cheat, or at least as close to it as I can and still have my conscience allow me to live. You know, my children may look honest, but sooner or later it's going to show up they're not honest because they're following dad. And that's just one illustration. It could go on and on. Inconsistency like that always springs up in the next generation. It becomes more evident than in the previous generation. Okay, the fourth one. Trying to do it all and alone. Turn to Exodus chapter 18, verse 13. Exodus 18, verse 13, trying to do it all and alone. I don't be clear here. I don't think Moses had a bad heart here. I think he had probably the purest of intentions, and he probably was really trying to do the best he could. But let's notice what happened. I'll just read this. Jethro's father-in-law was actually visiting Moses here. It sounds like he brought his wife and two boys with him somehow. I'm not sure. We don't have the details and all that. But as he was visiting, on verse 13 it says, "And it came to pass on the morrow," or the next day after he had come, "that Moses sat to judge the people. And the people stood by Moses from morning until evening." Now when you use this phrase in Bible language, it means basically from the time the sun came up to the sun set. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did to the people, he said, "What is this thing that thou doest to the people? Why sittest thou thyself alone, and all the people stand by thee from morning until even?" And Moses said unto his father-in-law, "Because the people come unto me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come unto me, and I judge between one another, and I do make them know the statutes of God and his laws." I can just see Moses, your father-in-law is like, "Moses, what in the world is going on here? You sat here all day from time the sun came up to the sun comes down. You'd had no time to visit with me. You'd had no time to visit with your wife and boys. You were so busy, but you were the only one doing this. What in the world is going on?" And Moses is like, "I had good heart. I was just doing what God has for me to do. These people have got problems, and somebody needs to help them sort through their problems. Somebody's got to help them figure out what God wants to do. So that's all I was doing." And notice what Moses' father-in-law said. "And Moses' father-in-law said unto him, 'The thing that thou doest is not good.'" Oh, that's hard. That's hard when you're thinking you're doing the absolute best you can, and somebody says, "The thing that you're doing is not good. Thou wilt surely wear away or weary, both thou and this people that is with thee, for this thing is too heavy for thee. Thou art not able to perform it thyself alone. Hearken now unto my voice. I will give thee counsel, and God shall be with thee. Be thou for the people to Godward, and thou mayest bring the causes unto God, and thou shalt teach them ordinances and laws, and shalt show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place such men over them to be rulers of thousands, and rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of ten. Let them judge the people at all seasons, and it shall be that every great matter they shall bring unto thee, but every small matter they shall judge. So shall it be easier for thyself, and they shall bear the burden with thee. If thou shalt do this thing, God command thee so, then shalt thou be able to endure, and all this people also shall go to their place in peace." And I love the next verse. "So Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all he had said. And Moses chose able men out of Israel and made them heads over people, rulers of thousands, rulers of hundreds, rulers of fifties, and rulers of tens. And they judged the people at all seasons. The hard cases or causes they brought unto Moses, but every small matter they judged themselves." And it's interesting. That's actually technically still the legal system that's supposed to be used in the U.S. It's kind of got pretty far from it. We no longer have rulers of 10 and hundreds. But anyway, as you look at the court systems with their different tiered construction, you know, it was an excellent idea, and I don't know. Moses probably had a real light bulb moment. I don't know. Here I was sitting here every day trying to do this all alone. And, you know, there's just no way Moses is going to be able to do this. We, of course, don't have an exact head count, but we know this was probably a couple million people at the least. Or, yeah, it's a little difficult to say, but let's say even a million on the slower edge. You know, there's just no way he was going to keep up with whatever dispute could come up. And by splitting it this way was awesome. And so I want to carefully say what I say next, because I think many people have good hearts and good intentions in some of this, but any worthwhile work, is it church work? Is it a publishing work? Is it a business even? Any worthwhile work has to be greater than one individual. That is not to say that a certain person or persons may not have a vital role, but even that needs to be carefully, they need to be careful in that. You know, if any work, if any church, if any type of work, organization, or business pivots on one person, the work will be no greater than that person's weaknesses. That work can be no greater than that person's weaknesses. And I'll give you an illustration of this. I need to say this carefully because y'all do know this a little bit about the situation. I don't think you know a lot about, so I think I can use it. But basically, there was a man that had a real vision and a plan for helping others, let's say. And he did an excellent job because of his background, the way he grew up and some things. He is an amazing individual for this. And he started this organization to help others that are in unfortunate circumstances. And he helped a lot of people. But over time, because of some other things came up, somebody else now fills the role that he did at this organization. And I know the one board member quite well that supports this organization. And he said this. He told me, he said, I feel a whole lot better and I feel like the work is a whole lot more effective with the director we have now in comparison to what we had because the director we have now is dependent on the board for his strength. The previous one ran his own organization and we were an afterthought. And to me, that shows how clearly, and I don't take me as being critical of our churches or anything, but I think it's a terribly weak area that we have in our churches, some of them. Some of us operate a little different. I'm not saying they're all that way. But some of our churches, some of our, like, our publishing works and things over the years have been way too much focused on one individual and their vision and their goal and their plan. And it's put in very strong built-in weaknesses into our churches and organizations because of that. And it's not what God intended. We can even look at Moses. Moses very much, probably in some ways, was the most outside of a king. As he did the work, God called him to the leadership position he had. At the same time, even Moses needed correcting. And this wasn't the only time. This happened twice. We'll look at it another time. And Moses actually was smart enough the second time to see the need for that. And that's probably going to come into the next message. But whenever you take an organization or a church and make one person the pivot point for everything, you've made the whole thing no stronger than the biggest weakness of that person. So, that brings a question to me, and I'm not necessarily saying it so much about the church here. In a way, we have to guard against it. But is the strength of our church or our organization, our business, whatever it is it the strength of an individual, which will end in weakness? Happens every time. Whenever a church organization depends on one individual, it wrecks every time when that individual either loses vision, loses steam, or is no longer available. Or is it the strength of our church organization? Is it the strengths and is it the combined strengths and submission of a group effort? Because that's a lot longer, and that can continue. And that's basically what Jethro was telling Moses to do. He said, train others to do. Start with the little stuff. Yes, the groups of 10. That's nothing more than my cow got into your garden and ate some of your corn or in your grain bin. You know, it's small things. Why do you have to be making a big deal out of it? Just figure out a fair price, settle it, all set. And that goes on. In a lot of ways, I have a good friend that's part of a church that's quite a bit larger than ours. And I've never been part of a church that's that big. And we were discussing church things. And I just asked him, how does church life work? I said, Do you feel like you're included? I said, it seems sometimes, even in a church our size, people sometimes struggle with feeling needed or included. And I said, that's something that really bothers me when people have those feelings. And I said, how does it work in a church your size? Well, he said, I don't know. He said, I guess as he feels a lot of that depends on the individual. He said, he's sure there's some of that. But he said, on the other hand, he said he's really appreciated their leadership in that if there is a need, if there is a struggle in somebody's life, they appoint three brethren and they let them basically work with this. And you know, that's one thing that's really challenged me is the ability, or I should say, do we have a vision, a need to just involve everyone as we work together on some of these things? And then the fifth point is a frustration and impatience with the people led to personal disobedience. I don't know, that kind of sounded kind of too familiar to me as a parent especially. I don't know if any of you other parents can associate with that at all. You're probably not impatient like I am, but I saw that one, I was like, wow. I'm not at all trying to be hard on Moses. Can you just imagine having these hundreds of thousands of children, basically, at least that's how they acted. He did an awesome job of not getting impatient. I've got three and I can get impatient. I don't know, he was amazing. At the same time, it still happened to poor Moses, if we want to call him that. And let's go to Numbers chapter 20, be my last point there. Numbers chapter 20, verse 2. And we have them come. I think this place was called Marah, or maybe they called it that afterwards. Numbers chapter 20, verse 2. So all these people come here, and I think this is a different place. I'm sorry, I was talking about the bitter waters. Here there was no water. Numbers 20, verse 2. And there was no water for the congregation, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and the people fussed at with Moses, and spake, saying, would God we had died when our brethren died before the Lord, referring back to the authority dispute, which is in my next message as well. And why have ye brought up the congregation of the Lord into this wilderness, that we and our cattle should die here? Oh, we're all going to die. Those people, they were quick to die. And wherefore have ye made us to come up out of Egypt to bring us into this evil place? It is no place of seed, or of figs, or of vine, or of pomegranates. Neither is there any water to drink. What a list. And Moses and Aaron went forth from the presence of the assembly unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and they fell upon their faces, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto them. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, take the rod, and gather thou the assembly together, thou and Aaron thy brother, and speak ye unto the rock before their eyes, and it shall give forth this water, and thou shalt bring forth to them water out of the rock, so shalt thou give the congregation and their beasts drink. So he's given direction, and he follows it to a certain extent. And Moses took the rod from before the Lord, as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the congregation together before the rock, and he said unto them. Now notice, often when Moses fell down on his face, he stood up again. He didn't have the spirit. Somehow when he fell this time, he forgot to let the spirit there. Just listen to this next part. He says, now, hear now, you rebels, must we fetch you water out of this rock? I don't think you could say that without having a little bit of attitude. And Moses lifted up his hand, and with his rod he smote the rock twice, and the water came forth abundantly, and the congregation drank, and their beasts also. But that wasn't quite the end of this one. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, because ye believed not, or feared not, me not, to sanctify, or see me as holy, needing to be obeyed in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore ye shall not bring this congregation into the land which I have given them. In other words, it was at that point God told him, you will not be leading these people into the land of Canaan. And I don't know, I guess to me I really needed, actually I needed all, but especially this point of, it's so easy to get frustrated. Why don't you know better? Why do you do this? But you know, especially in leadership, as a parent, whatever form it is, I can't do any good where I'm frustrated, where I'm impatient. And in thinking back, I don't say this negatively about my dad at all, but one thing I really struggled with my dad about was his impatience with me sometimes. And yet, I see myself struggling with that very thing. I hope I gained a little bit of ground, but I'm not always sure I have. Something I really struggle with, so pray for me in that. But you know, impatience cannot build God's work in others. It's impossible on whatever level you're trying to serve. So in closing, you know, as we lay aside our personal vision, goals, desires, opinions, and plans, by focusing on God, that's really the only way to do that, and what he wants done, I will then begin at home with myself, with my family, to build God's kingdom. Also, as I see God and the big picture of his work, his kingdom, I will realize how very inadequate I am and gladly seek to inspire and enable others to help with that work, because I can't do it. And as we do this, you know, as we involve others, as we teach others to do God's work and we together do God's work, it also helps keep us from the frustration and impatience that leads to personal disobedience. And I hope this wasn't negative in any way, and we sure want to look at the positives too, Lord willing, sometime, maybe a while, but let's just be inspired by those who were very much like us, who faced struggles very much like us, yet in it all, like Moses, I don't know if there's anybody that really walked much closer with God, and finally he wasn't, because God, yeah, basically God took him and buried him in such a way that nobody could ever find him. So may God bless you, each one, in where you are called to lead, and don't forget, you are a leader, so if that makes you feel better. Let's kneel for prayer.